Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the first part of LPEC's showcase event exploring the listed private capital opportunity. We've got three very interesting companies presenting today: London-listed NB Private Equity Partners, Helsinki-listed Capman, and Brussels-listed GIMP, proving immediately that listed private capital comes in many different varieties. At this point, I'm going to do a quick plug for part two, which is next Monday the 12th, when we'll be joined by three more and different companies. And if you haven't registered for part two yet, please do so. I'm Chief Executive of LPEC, the International Group for Listed Private Capital Companies. And I get to start things off with a brief general look at listed private capital. We have got a mixed audience today. Many of you may be new to listed private capital. So what I'm going to cover is some context, what listed private capital is and why it should matter to investors. Those of you who know all this already, please bear with me just for a few minutes. So what is it? Listed private capital involves closed-end funds that then invest in private assets. That's putting it simply. They put together carefully constructed and diversified collections of stakes in these attractive assets. The funds themselves then list on public stock exchanges, and this means you can buy and sell shares in them as you would in any other company. Listed private capital comes in different forms, which is actually what makes it interesting, as investors can choose according to their preferences. Put simply, and it isn't entirely simple, there are, first of all, funds that work with a single manager, known as direct funds, and the three firms presenting today are all direct funds. And there are also those that invest with multiple managers, described as funds of funds. Direct funds invest through funds directly in the underlying business, as their name would suggest, and fund of funds take stakes in a number of unlisted private equity funds, which in turn invest in the underlying companies. Just to make it a bit more complicated, there are also some hybrids, investing mainly in other unlisted funds, but with a portion of direct investment too. That was a lot of use of the word funds. The fund managers make these investments either when the funds are launched, which is known as primary investment, or by taking on investment commitments as businesses in the fund require new capital, known as secondary investment. Others add parcels of loans or specialise entirely in the credit field or in turnarounds. And funds can also have a sector or geographical specialisation, and we'll hear a lot more about that today. Or they invest at different stages. So venture capital funds, for example, invest in early stage emerging businesses, while buyout funds look at more mature businesses. So that's what listed private equity is, but why should it actually matter to investors? Well, for a start, in the 10 years to the end of 2019, listed private equity outperformed global public markets by more than a third, and that's allowing for dividend income and for fees. So it matters because of performance, but also because public markets are providing less and less investor choice. The number of companies listed on public markets has roughly halved since the peak in the late 90s. And today, private capital is funding companies that have never seen a stock exchange, and in many cases, never will. Fewer companies and assets are coming to public markets at any point at all, or if they are, most of their growth is happening well before they get there. And public markets are often simply unsuitable for many sectors. Private capital is better for their needs. It's more flexible. It has a long-term outlook. It can provide them with a reliable planned sequence of funding for longer term growth strategies so they can build value and create more sustainable businesses, contributing to a more sustainable society. And particularly relevant in our post-COVID world, private capital has been providing a vital lifeline, funding assets with capital that might be hard to find elsewhere. The upshot of all of this is that there are now entire specialist subsectors, technology enablement, such as edutech or other smart industries or health and care, that are simply not widely available on many public markets. In fact, many national stock markets, arguably, now have sector skews that no longer provide investors with adequate diversification. In summary, then, listed private capital offers access to performance, exciting investment strategies, to companies' assets and often whole sectors that are simply not available on public markets. Investors get diversification, and particularly in the case of companies, those in a relatively high phase of growth. And listed private capital means that investors of all sizes get to invest, not just big institutions, pension funds, insurance companies, sovereign wealth funds, and so on. Listing funds on public markets democratizes access, and it means smaller investors aren't excluded from these interesting opportunities. So now to talk about what this means in practice, we have three of the leaders in the sector. First up is NB Private Equity Partners, Paul Daggett. Paul.
Great. Thank you very much, Deborah. I appreciate the introduction. So I'm Paul Daggett, Managing Director with Neuberger Berman. And if we turn to the first slide, so I'll start by introducing the manager of NBPE, which is Neuberger Berman. Neuberger Berman is a global privately owned investment manager, which manages about $380 billion of assets across equities, fixed income, and private markets. And as you can see, we have $70 billion under management in private markets. We've been investing for 30 years in private equity. We have about 150 investment professionals across 10 offices. And over the last 3 years, on average, we committed about $13 billion to the private equity asset class. So all of this means we're very well known within what we do within private equity, which will become very important to you as I explain the strategy that we have within the fund. Second point I wanted to make, though, is as part of a larger investment manager, we do get to benefit from the resources and the scale that the platform provides to us. And one of those is ESG that you see on the right. And so Neuberger Berman itself has centralized ESG resources and personnel. And within the private equity group, we also have specialized personnel focused on ESG. And as you can see, this resulted in us receiving an A+ top score from the PRI assessment for ESG, both for private equity and for the firm as a whole. Secondly, not shown on the page, but NBP itself has a responsible and sustainable investment policy, which was issued by the board in 2020. And so you have the manager very focused on ESG and integrated into our due diligence and investment processes. But you also have the fund itself and the board making that statement of how important ESG is to us. So moving on to NBPE on the next slide. The company itself, as Deborah says, is listed on the London Stock Exchange, and we've been listed since 2007. We have about $1.2 billion of net asset value invested in private equity. And you can see that our strategy is direct investments in high quality companies. We're focused on co-investments, which I'll explain in just a second. We have a very selective and responsible investment approach. And in the bottom, you can see a very strong track record of returns. We're showing the last 5 years here and looking at portfolio IRRs, which was 18% over that time period. But I'll get into more details on that. But one other point to make, this should really be a fifth bullet here, is that we also pay a dividend twice a year. That dividend is set to be 3% of our NAV. Which, because we do trade on a discount at the moment, obviously translates into a higher yield than 3% based on the share price. On the next page, we talk a little bit more about co-investments. And so let me start by explaining what a co-investment is. So Deborah explained there's direct funds and there's fund of funds. Our approach actually, in a way, is somewhere in between the two, although we are a direct investor. So a co-investment is an investment made alongside a lead private equity fund directly into the equity of individual companies. And those opportunities come about because there are occasions where a private equity fund wants to make an investment into a company, but it can't write all of the equity from its own fund. So for an example, in a mid-market investment, there might be $200 million of equity needed to complete a transaction. And if the fund can only do 100 from its fund, then it will need to find an additional 100 from somewhere. And it has the choice of either going out and bringing in another private equity fund and sharing control in that deal, or going out and looking for other partners for that extra $100 million who will invest alongside them, but will allow them to ultimately control the company. And that's what a co-investment is. And there's a number of advantages that we believe come from that. First of all, selectivity. We can pick the investments ourselves. We typically see somewhere between 300 to 400 opportunities for co-investments offered to Neuberger Berman in an average year. And we typically select on the platform somewhere between 10 to 15% of those investments. So we can be very selective and look for particular themes and obviously high quality companies to invest in. We can also control our own pace of investing. Because we're a direct fund, we can start and stop investing whenever we choose. That's obviously a little bit different to a fund of funds, which would commit to an underlying private equity fund or a group of them. And those funds themselves will call capital when they need it. And once you've made that commitment, you don't control the timing of those capital outflows. With a direct strategy like co-investing, we do control the pacing. So we can invest when we want to. We can also choose to stop investing if there's a particular need to do that. There's also fee efficiency. The benefit of co-investing is that in return for the lead fund getting control of the company and running the company, then co-investors typically pay no management fee or carried interest. And that's certainly the case for us in the vast majority of the co-investments we have, which makes it a very fee-efficient strategy. And then finally, diversification. And we come to the logos on the page. One of the ways we can diversify the portfolio is by general partner. And so these are the lead funds that we've invested alongside over the last 3 years. There's 31 different sponsors we've invested alongside in 43 investments. And you'll recognize some of the logos like KKR, BC Partners. But there's also a lot of other logos you may not recognize because they're mid-market funds or because they're industry specialists. And to take one that perhaps you will recognize, within technology, you see Thoma Bravo, Silver Lake, Francisco Partners, all leading software and tech investors that we've co-invested alongside in one or more investments over the last 3 years. So we believe you get the benefit of diversification by general partner while also accessing these investments, typically with no management fee or carried interest. So to go on to the results on the next page, this is an overview of our direct equity portfolio. And if we start on the right, we have $1.3 billion of direct equity investments in the portfolio. That represents about 89% of the portfolio as a whole. And we have 89 investments. So obviously, the average is about 1% of the total portfolio within our direct equity investments, which we think is a good level of diversification. The biggest investment is almost 6% of the portfolio fair value, and the top 20 investments make up about 50% of the fair value. And so we think we've got a good level of diversification such that we do have the protection that diversification is intended to provide. But equally, if one investment does perform particularly well, they're big enough to really drive overall results for the fund. So we think that diversification is in a good place, which again is somewhere between what you might see in some direct funds and fund of funds. And then in the results on the left at the top, you can see the direct equity investments have produced very good performance over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. And because that's almost 90% of the portfolio now, obviously that's driving the overall returns of the portfolio. And again, we'll come to returns in a bit more detail in a couple of slides. But one more thing on diversification on the next slide is that we are, as you can see on the left, weighted to North America. We also have a meaningful exposure to Europe though. So we think North America is an attractive market, the deepest private equity market in the world, but we are global in nature and do consider investments from Europe and rest of the world. And then in terms of industry on the right, we are well diversified by industry, as you can see, with tech, media, and telecom, industrials, consumer, as the largest exposures. But importantly, within those industries, we look for two key themes. One is companies which have long-term secular growth drivers. The other is companies or industries where we think there is less cyclicality expected in their particular business model or industry. And both of those are designed to allow us to produce hopefully stable returns while driving upside through other levers within the investment strategies of the company. And just very quickly to give you two examples, if you take consumer, which is a sector that you probably don't think of as either non-cyclical or maybe not even with secular growth drivers, two example companies in our portfolio are PetSmart Chewy, and the Chewy part of that business is an online retailer of pet supplies in the US. And obviously online retail itself has had a long-term secular growth driver, and we expect that to continue. So that would be an example within consumer of a secular growth driver. But then there's a company called Action, which you may know. Obviously 3i is the lead investor in that particular company, but it's a discount non-food retailer and is tended to be relatively less cyclical on a same store sales basis while driving growth overall through rolling out new stores. And so both of those are examples within the consumer sector. And then finally, it's not a pie chart on the page, we're also well diversified by vintage year. And typically we've seen good realizations. So most of the companies in the portfolio have been in the portfolio for less than 5 years, but we're well diversified across 2017, 18, 19, and 20 in terms of investments. And the average holding period within the portfolio at the moment is 3.4 years. Moving on to liquidity, so far this year, we've so far had 10 full or partial exits announced in addition to an IPO of one of the largest companies in the portfolio. And so you see the 10 logos on this page, and at the bottom are some statistics. These 10 full or partial realizations are expected when completed to produce a total multiple on the capital we invested into those companies of 3.5 times our money. That represents an $160 million estimated NAV gain versus where we held those companies as of the end of December in our financial statements. And that's an 88% uplift, which is above our historical average, not necessarily something we would expect to continue. But it does show you that so far this year, we've had a very good set of results and realizations. A little bit more on returns on the next slide. And there's three bars on each of these charts, which looks at year to date, 1 year, 3 year, and 5 years. There's NAV total return shown in dollars and in sterling. And then the share price to the right is shown only in sterling. We are listed in both sterling and dollars on the LSE though. But you can see that over so far year to date, we've got a 15% NAV total return in dollars. The share price return is about 18%. Over 1 year, the numbers are higher. Obviously, that has a slightly lower starting point in May of 2020. But you can see over 3 years, 5 years, results have been very good across NAV total return and share price. So we're very proud of the returns that we have been creating. But one thing to point out in the bottom right is that we are trading still on a 24% discount. That is something which we are hoping the results that we've been producing, if we can continue to do this, our goal is to narrow that discount over time. Many private equity funds that are listed do trade on discounts, but of course that doesn't mean you have to be satisfied with that. And we are working on a number of initiatives to try to narrow that over time. But at the moment it is a 24% discount to the net asset value. And finally, in summary, we believe we have a differentiated strategy. As I mentioned, we can be selective with picking the individual co-investments with an extra layer of due diligence from our 150 investment professionals. We can be dynamic with the pacing of our deployment of capital. And we believe we are have a fee-efficient strategy with that single layer of fees on the vast majority of investments. Performance has been good year to date, 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, and a lot of realizations already announced this year. I will also note that because our portfolio has an average holding period of 3.4 years, and we are still seeing a very strong private equity market, we are hopeful that we can continue to produce realizations, maybe not at the pace that we saw in the first 6 months, but hopefully we can keep doing that. And equally, we are still making new investments. We've made $50 million worth of new investments across five companies so far this year. We're seeing very strong deal flow, but we're also being relatively cautious about picking our spots carefully because the market is, of course, very competitive at the moment. So we're being cautious about the pace and the opportunities we pick. but we do expect to continue to deploy capital as the year goes on. And with that, a very quick run through of MBPE. I'll hand over to Linda, and we'll be back for questions at the end. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. And good afternoon from me, from an uncharacteristically warm and sunny Helsinki. And my name is Linda Tierala, and I'm Director of Investor Relations and Communications at CapMand. And I'm very happy to see that so many of you here are interested in hearing about CapMan, which probably for most of you is a quite new acquaintance on the listed private capital scene. But in this presentation, I hope to provide you with a short overview of our company and our business model and earnings logic, as well as then present some key trends and developments in our portfolio. I surely hope that this will pique your interest and that you will be inclined to follow CapMan's developments in the future. So CapMan was founded in 1989 as one of the first private equity companies in the Nordics. We have been active in this market for over 30 years, and we have a presence in all the Nordic capitals except in Iceland. So we have offices in Helsinki, which is our headquarters, in Stockholm, in Copenhagen and Oslo, as well as in London and Luxembourg. At the moment, our portfolio consists of 110 companies and real estate assets as well. We cover the full spectrum of private capital, so from private equity to real estate and infrastructure. And we have approximately 250 limited partners as investors in our funds. And these limited partners are what we refer to as our main customers. Most of them are Nordic institutional investors, since this is our home market, so Nordic pension funds and insurance companies. But an increasing number of capital is actually coming from large international investors from the US, the continental Europe, UK, and Asia. Our assets under management are almost 4 billion euros, which is an all-time high for CapMan. And CapMan was listed on Nasdaq Helsinki in 2001, and our market cap is around 450 million euros. Investing in CapMan is a liquid way of accessing a diversified portfolio of unlisted companies, real estate, and infrastructure in the Nordics. I'll now briefly present CapMan's business model and earning streams, as it differs a bit from the listed direct fund model that Deborah described in the beginning of this seminar. So CapMan is a private assets manager, which means that we manage mostly closed-end funds that invest in private assets according to various different strategies. And these funds are organized as limited partnerships, and they're not directly owned by CapMan. So rather, we act as the fund manager, and we receive management fees from the funds, as well as carried interest. And in addition, we have a service business that offers private equity-related services to another set of customers. But what makes this model so special is really the fee component of both the management company business and the service business, since this fee component is highly predictable, as the funds typically have a 10-year terms, and the initial fund size, as well as the acquisition value of the underlying portfolio. These two components determine the magnitude of future management fees over the lifetime of the fund. And then in addition, carried interest, that's determined based on the success of the fund and is paid to us as fund managers when the fund has repaid the invested capital back to its limited partners in addition to a hurdle rate. And in addition to the management company business and the service business, we also invest from our own balance sheet. And these investments are mostly done in our own funds alongside our limited partners. So in that sense, we as a fund manager also have our own skin in the game by investing our own capital in the funds. And this provides then returns from realized investments and fair value changes for the investors in CapMan stock. So CapMan is a multi-product house, which means that our portfolio is extremely diversified in terms of both sectors and types of assets. We have three distinctive investment areas. Those are real estate, infrastructure, and private equity. And further, these investment areas are divided into several investment strategies. So, for example, our real estate business invests in both value-add real estate and income-focused real estate across the Nordic countries. And we have one of the largest real estate-focused investment teams in the Nordics. And we also manage the largest hotels fund in the Nordic countries. The infrastructure investment area is our newest investment area with one fund under management and two mandates. And the team is, they're based in Helsinki and Stockholm, and they invest mostly in energy, transportation and telecom infrastructure. But then on the private equity side, we cover the full spectrum except very early venture capital. So on the private equity side, our growth team, they make minority investments in Nordic rapid growth companies with proven business models. So we don't take any technology risk, for example. And then the buyout team, they take majority stakes in Nordic companies. And the special situations, which is our newest private equity strategy, they invest in business turnarounds and restructurings. And the CapMan credit team, they provide private debt financing for Nordic buyouts. All in all, the private equity investments that we do, they do not have an industry focus, but rather all teams pick interesting growth stories and niche market leaders across sectors. And we see that this is a good way to diversify the portfolio and to make sure that we have exposure to a lot of different interesting growth sectors altogether. And in total, the funds that we manage, they have a significant impact on the underlying Nordic economies. So for example, the combined area of our real estate assets is more than 1 million square meters, and we house more than 3,000 tenants. The close to 40 portfolio companies in our funds under management, they have a combined turnover of 2.5 billion euros, and they employ more than 15,000 employees. So, and these figures are, they of course change as we make additional investments and exits from the current portfolio. We've already made quite a few this year. And this graph is just to show you an overview of how these assets under management in CapMan's funds are distributed. So the majority of our funds are in real estate. So that's about 2.5 billion euros. And then in private equity funds, we have approximately 1 billion euros under management, and infrastructure, which is the newest area, we have approximately 400 million euros under management, but we expect that figure to grow quite rapidly. So in total, we manage close to 4 billion euros in total. And the development of CapMan's asset under management is a very important indicator of our future earnings potential, since it's the assets under management that determine the magnitude of the management fees and also determine what the carried interest potential will be. So our assets under management have increased significantly over the past 20 years. If we look at what the situation was just in turn of the last millennium, we had exclusively buyout funds under management, but we started expanding our operations quite quickly after we went public in 2001. So we raised larger buyout funds, and then we also launched the first real estate funds already in 2005. The financial crisis that hit us quite hard. So we went through several years of stagnation. But then since 2016, the CapMan's assets under management have been firmly back on the growth track with new investment strategies and new funds launched every year. And we also now have a strong pipeline of successor funds for our existing strategies and new initiatives to continue this trend. As you may recall, in addition to just managing funds, CapMan also invests directly from our own balance sheet. We do this to firmly align our interests with those of our limited partner investors, but then also to provide an additional earnings boost. The fair values of our private asset investments are currently at approximately 130 million euros. And that allocation of these investments has developed in a more diversified direction in the past 10 years. as you can see from this graph pictured here. So we used to be quite heavily invested in buyout, which is quite natural since that's where CapMan's story started back at the end of the 80s. But today we have a much more even distribution of our own balance sheet, and the exposure of new investment strategies is seen also in our own balance sheet investments. And the allocation of undrawn commitments, which is the bar on the right-hand side of the slide, is approximately 100 million euros. And these undrawn commitments further demonstrate how this allocation of our balance sheet is likely to develop going forward. So as you can see, we have undrawn commitments across the different strategies, with commitments to the most newly established funds showing an increased weight. Last but not least, since this is something that's very important, not just for CapMan as a company, but also for the development of the value creation of our portfolio. So sustainability has always been an integral part of CapMan's operations, just starting from our values, of which one is active ownership. And we have, in the last few years, developed a rigorous ESG framework for all of our funds, where we look at relevant UN Sustainable Development Goals and follow select KPIs to measure how we meet these goals. And the SDGs that we work with are gender equality in decision making, and that's measured by the gender distribution of management groups and boards of our portfolio companies. And the second goal is decent work and economic growth, which we measure by the growth in jobs in our portfolio companies. And then the third is climate action, and that's measured in absolute emissions and emissions efficiency. And the last sustainable development goal that we follow actively is one related to strong governance. And that's measured by the implementation of anti-bribery and corruption protocols in all of our portfolio companies and assets, then as well as the establishment of reporting frameworks. And in addition to these four SDGs that are crucial for all of CapMan's funds and the group as a whole, each individual investment may have additional KPIs that they look to and that they measure in addition. But here on this slide are some results from our most recent ESG overview. So as you can see, there's been a slight increase in the share of women of our buyout portfolio company management groups. There's a quite strong growth of jobs in our growth funds, so that's plus 17%, and a significant reduction in CO2 emissions in our largest portfolio company. That's one of our infrastructure assets, a ferry company called Norled. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that this one single investment accounts for almost 45% of all the CO2 emissions in the portfolio. So that's why it's quite significant that we have been able through last year to reduce emissions by 23% in this asset. And CapMan is a signatory of the UN Principles of Responsible Investment. We've been since 2012. And have done quite well in the latest assessment. So we achieved an A+ score for all investment areas we report for the PRI. But that said, we are still only in the beginning of this this journey. So, but by helping our portfolio companies set relevant goals and targets, we think we can achieve significant results also on an aggregate level and make a real difference. With that, I would just like to let you know that CapMan publishes our half year results on 5th of August, and that presentation will be webcast, and you'll find additional details on our website closer to the event. But I would like to thank you for your attention, and I really hope that you have gained a bit more insight into CapMan and what private equity in the Nordics looks like. look forward to answering any questions that you may have after all the presentations have been concluded. And now I'm happy to hand over to Christoph, who will be the next presenter. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Good afternoon, everybody. And also from my side, it's really an honor and a pleasure to present to you our company, GIMF. You will see that it is already a proof of the variety that you can invest in if you invest in listed private capital, because GIMF is an example of another approach with regards to value creation in private equity. But I will elaborate more on that in the course of my presentation. So as it is said on this slide, we are a specialized European mid-market investment company. So we are a direct investor in growth companies. So and we are an investment company, so not a fund. So there is already the big difference in the sense that for more than 40 years now, we are investing directly in companies with money that is provided to us by our shareholders who buy the listed stock. So if you buy a stock of GIMF, you buy, in fact, access to a portfolio of growth companies that is directly on our balance sheet. We do that with a solid balance sheet. We have sufficient liquidity and equity strength in order to continue to invest and to continue our growth. And with the business model that we have and also the funding model that we have, we can have the flexibility to have a long-term view on value creation, because we don't feel the urge of limited partners that might be eager to get their cash back. We can be more flexible in that respect. We do have a way of sharing the returns we make with our shareholders, but I will come back to that later on as well. So a quick overview of what we are in terms of figures. We have today a portfolio on our balance sheet of 1.2 billion euros. In total, we manage 2 billion euros. So a large chunk of that is already invested in our portfolio. The portfolio consists of 57 portfolio companies. So you see that the average ticket is about 20 million. That is what we on average do invest. But we have a very wide range there. So we invest tickets between 5 to 75 million euros in one individual company. These 57 portfolio companies in total generate 2.8 billion euros and employ 15,000 professionals within these companies. As I said, we exist for more than 40 years because we have started our activities in 1980. And we are listed on the Brussels Stock Exchange as of 1997, so now for 24 years already. And over the time, we have generated a net return for the shareholders on an annual basis of 11.5%. We are an investment company with offices in four countries, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, and France. So we look to, let's say, the low to mid-market private equity activities in these four countries. But we are not organized according to a geographical scope, but we are organized according to what we call investment platforms. And we see these on the next slide, where you see the four investment platforms, let's say the four areas of specialization with which we look at potential growth companies to be added to our portfolio. These four areas are consumer, health and care, smart industries, and sustainable cities. So the composition of our investment teams is according to these four platforms and not according to the countries where we have our own offices. So for instance, an investment manager of the health and care team in Paris will have more exchange with his health and care colleague in The Hague in the Netherlands than the person sitting next to him in the Paris office, for instance, belonging to the smart industries team. You see here what the value creation scope is of these four platforms. The main reason why we have chosen to be organized in this way is that over the last couple of years, and this is in fact already taking place as of 2012, 2013, we see that specialization really becomes the key in our business in order to create value. in the past, maybe private equity was a bit more financially driven and more driven by putting in place the good capital structure and financial structure. This has become a commodity, and today it really is about creating value. It is about thinking with the entrepreneur of the portfolio company on how we can further grow his company, what the best strategy is to do so, how we can further grow his company or her company with M&A, with further acquisitions. And so there is a wide range of value creation strategies that is based on a thorough knowledge and insights in the different industries we invest in. So already with that approach, we offer a kind of a diversification with regards to the composition of our portfolio. Maybe to give some examples on that approach, I want to go to the next slide, just to illustrate a bit more on how this is made concrete. And here I present you some new investments we did over the last year. I will quickly go into what these companies do, just to show how we look at investment selection in the portfolio composition. So for the consumer area, we have invested in back in March of this year in a company called Sofa Tutor in Germany. Sofa Tutor is the leading digital education platform in Germany. We all have seen that throughout COVID, digitalization in our economy, but certainly also in our education activities has seen a very rapid development. We don't think that this will stop. On the contrary, it will only further accelerate. And therefore, we think it is very useful and interesting to invest in a company that is already the leader in that area in the German market. For our health and care platform, on the top right-hand side, we have invested recently in a company called Biolam. Biolam is a group of medical laboratories in the northwest of France. Medical laboratories, of course, also there, needless to say, that we have seen the use of that over the last 18 months. But next to that, it's not only corona related, but it is also a growing trend towards more, let's say, medical diagnostics, and the need for that is only increasing. This investment is really a buy and build investment. So you really want to build a network of medical laboratories in that area. Since our investments, we have done already 5 add-on acquisitions in the last 12 months. So really a rapidly growing company. For Smart Industries, I want to share with you our investment in Televic. Televic is a Belgian company that is very innovative in the development of communication solutions, communication products for a wide range of activities, for instance, in public transport, but also in healthcare, but also in conference systems. They are at the forefront of technical innovation, and also they have a very international scope. I just want to share with you that the whole conference system of the United Nations, for instance, is provided by the company Televic, rapidly growing as well, and a new investment in our Smart Industries platform. And then just to share with you also how we look at value creation from a sustainable cities perspective, we have been investing in Verclay. Verclay is a Dutch company that builds out networks for utilities, both for energy utilities, but also for telecom utilities. And they're supporting, let's say, the trend towards electrification, but also the trend towards a stronger digital network that we need for a data-driven society. This is illustrative, but just to share with you how we look at investment opportunities and how we think we can create value, not only for the economy and for our shareholder, but also for the society at large. So these were just 4 examples. Here you see the total portfolio. Rest assured, I'm not going to describe the activities of all these companies. The only thing I want to say to you as a potential investor in the GIMF stock is that by buying the HIM stock, you buy this portfolio. So you buy a large portfolio of all not public companies or not yet public companies that have one common feature, which is the growth potential. These are companies that are very diverse in their sectors, in their activities, but also very diverse in their phase of development. And maybe one illustration of that next to the examples I already gave is that we also have a portfolio today in place of about 10 biotech companies. This is, let's say, the activity where we invest in the earliest stage of development. And all of these companies have also strong development for value, strong potential for value creation. Yeah, this is just coming back to the Televic. I already explained this more in detail just a few minutes ago. So the only reason why we highlight this a bit more here is that we want to stress that also in Western Europe, we can invest in industries, we can invest in companies that produce innovative systems and solutions, and there is really a way to do so. This is a rather large company, 130 million euros in turnover, about 1,000 employees. With still strong growth potential. And then BioLem, I already elaborated on that as well. As said, this is a buy-and-build approach for medical laboratories in France. Today, 15 laboratories in place with 150 employees, but this group will further grow strongly in the next couple of years. So after having illustrated how we look at potential value, I would like to show you also the different levers that we identify at the moment that we select our investment opportunities. And you see here six areas of potential growth. One can be accelerating sales. It can really be that we detect a company or we see an investment opportunity in a company where the product is in place, but where we still have to go for the best product market combination and a more efficient and effective sales strategy can be there the element to unlock the value. Another element can be the global anchoring, so that we look at the internationalization potential of these companies. They can be very strong in one specific area or one specific geography. But that there can be a lot of international further value potential. Buy and build, I already mentioned that one through BioLam. That is, in fact, an approach towards value creation that is applied more and more today. You buy one company that has the platform potential to become a leader in its sector, typically a sector that is characterized by a very high degree of proliferation. So there have a lot of different companies still active in that area, and where you, through buy and build, through acquisition, can buy a leader in the sector. From product innovation to go to market, this is typically for the companies that are a bit earlier in their development phase. The product is there. The strength of the product is proven by the fact that there are already some reference customers in place, but now it's all about go to market. It's about making the business model work to sell the product. Operational excellence can be another one, where we can further improve the functioning of the company, where we can put processes in place, where we can put a reporting system in place, etc., in order to create value. And finally, there is also the strategic positioning. This typically comes more towards the end of our investment period, where we want to highlight the strategic value, the strategic strength of a company within a certain sector in order to make it an attractive company for potential acquirers. This is what we do. This is how we look at our portfolio. Maybe just some figures there on the bottom end of this slide. For instance, over the last year, within our portfolio of 57 portfolio companies, we have done 24 add-on acquisitions. This was next to 7 new portfolio companies in which we invested throughout the last year. So it's a rather intensive activity. We had top line growth as well as profitability growth over the last year. And this in contrast with the economy as a whole, which shrank with about 6-7% in that period, our portfolio has seen both top line and profitability growth. And also through exits we have done, because you should know, of course, that we have also a rotation strategy with regards to our portfolio, where we, of course, at a certain moment want to realize the value that is created through an exit. And over the last year, there was 100 million euros of capital gains realized on companies we have sold, both to strategic investors as well as to new financial investors. How does this translate? This translates into a portfolio return, as it is shown here, over the last 7 years. You should know that we have an internal target of a 15% gross portfolio return. Well, we have gone above that level for the last 6 out of 7 years over this period. The year before the last year was, of course, impacted by the fact that we closed our annual accounts at the end of March. And at the end of March last year, in 2020, at that moment, the capital markets were at their bottom with the impact of Corona and the strong decline we have seen in capital markets. But this was more than compensated by the strong return we have realized over the last financial year with the 27% portfolio return. And over the last 7 years, we have an aggregate return of 18% on our portfolio. So clearly surpassing our target of 15%. Where does this portfolio return come from? And this is the next slide. As I said, we have a strong focus on growth. And this is also shown by the figures. This is an illustration of an analysis that we have done on the exits over the last 5 years. So the total investment cost of companies we have sold over the last 5 years was 316 million euros. The total proceeds of these exits is 1,079 million euros. So you see there that the exits that we have realized over the last 5 years generated a money multiple of 3x. So we have generated 3 times the money that we have invested. And we have also done an analysis of where this value creation came from. And here you see that 80% of that value creation was generated by growth. A much larger part came from multiple increase, so where the buyer was happy to pay a higher multiple versus the one we paid at the moment of our entry. And in fact, the deleveraging, which is sometimes the characteristic that is applied to private equity value creation, for us as a company, it's not at all, on average, a source of value creation. So for us, sustainable value creation within private equity comes from growth, hence the organization according to platforms, the specialization of our investment teams, and the approach we have to value creation with the 6 levers I shared with you. So this is a really proof of the fact of, let's say, the success of our strategy with regards to our value creation. And that's the slide that concludes my explanation and my introduction on GIMF. Because an element that I haven't touched upon yet is the dividend that we pay out. We, on an annual basis, pay out a rather stable dividend. Our policy is to keep the dividend stable and to increase it when it is possible in a sustainable way. Our dividend yield today is about 4.6%. So when looking at the evolution of the GIMF stock price, which is the red line here on this graph, you tend to underestimate the value creation that we do for our shareholders. And so if you add up the dividend towards to the value creation and even look at it with the dividend reinvested in the stock, you see a whole different picture. And if you see there on the graph the evolution over the last 10 years, you see that an investor in the GIMF share has more than doubled its investment. And over a period of 15 years, in fact, it's more than tripled its investment. So over the last 15 years, we have paid out 1 billion euros in dividends. If you compare that with the current portfolio of 1.2 billion euros, you could say that we have more or less distributed the total value towards our shareholders over a period of 15 years. And today we still have a new portfolio in place with about the same value. So it's about rotation, it's about value creation, it's about sharing that value creation with our shareholder and at the same time also growing our own portfolio. As said, we have a portfolio today of 1.2 billion euros. This is a record level for GIMF in its 40 years history. And we have the ambition and the intention to further grow it over the next couple of years. So with that, I would like to conclude my introduction to GIMF as an investment company. And I would like to hand over now for the Q&A.
Many thanks, Christoph. And we've got a question for Paul. You've seen strong NAV growth last year and year to date. Can you say a little bit more about what has been driving performance, particularly in the context of COVID and post-COVID?
Thank you for that question. So realizations you'll see so far this year have been a key driver of those returns, and that was in the slide that we showed, looking at our 2021 results so far. And those realizations have been across 10 companies plus an IPO, and all different kinds of realizations, some full, some partial, some to private equity, some to strategics. So I would say this year, the driver has been really having those 10 companies, you know, an attractive portfolio of investments, which are the type of investments that both strategics and private equity are looking for. So that has been the biggest part. The second piece, of course, is private equity valuations are ultimately usually based on public comparables with a discount applied to them. And so there's not a one-to-one correlation of this, but as public markets go up, providing, of course, that your underlying portfolio is performing well, then typically you will also see private equity valuations increase over time. And that has been the case also within the portfolio. And I think it's definitely critical to point out that underlying those increases in valuation in MBPE's portfolio, you've seen both revenue and EBITDA growth of about 6% over the last time we actually published this was as of year end. But during 2020, the average EBITDA and revenue growth of our portfolio was about 6% for each. And so it's really a combination of all those things: valuations, performance of the companies and the companies doing well, and then the exits we've had have driven that growth.
Great, thank you very much. And just one more question while you're there. With the share price where it is at the moment, what is the dividend yield?
So we set the dividend, or the board sets the dividend, as 3% of NAV. Now, when we did that, last dividend in February. NAV has increased since then. So I think the yield is just a little over 3% on share price at the moment because NAV has increased. But of course, we'll see that the next dividend is paid in August. The board has not yet made a statement about it, but the policy is at least 3% of NAV. And of course, with the 24% discount, that would mean the share price yield is higher than 3%, and you know, somewhat meaningfully with that 24% discount.
Great, thank you. And for Linda, can you provide more information on the real estate investments, which sectors you're invested in, such as commercial offices, etc., and how have these been affected by COVID?
Sure, absolutely. So we invest across actually all the different sectors. So on the value add side, we invest in offices, in retail spaces, and here mostly sort of a high street retail. So not really shopping centers or that sort of properties, and then on the income side, we invest in hotels and in residential real estate. So we do see the whole spectrum of real estate investments, and we especially focus on growth centers in the Nordic region. So that's mainly the capital regions, but then also selectively other other cities where we see sort of strong demographics backing up the demand for these real estate sectors. And COVID has it's had an impact on our real estate portfolio, and then in some instances the real estate investments have been quite sort of a defensive play in this market. So quite obviously the hotel's real estate has been affected and was quite early on, but there again, as owners of sort of the actual real estate assets and not the hotel operations, we've been able to work together with the hotel operators, with which we have really long leases, and just to work out ways for them to be able to continue with their operations and get back on track, as we've all foreseen that even though this situation is difficult now, it will not last forever, and we have good assets and really good tenants and sort of a very long term view in terms of these assets. But then at the same time, we see still quite strong demand, especially on the residential side. So that's really sort of there's been a demand surge there. And then at the same time on the office side, even though there's been a lot of discussions about sort of how this how we will continue working in a post-COVID world and whether the home office will take over the actual physical office, there's still quite a lot of demand for high quality attractive spaces, and there's actually a push to in a sense also upgrade office facilities. So we do see quite interesting demand in the types of assets that our value-add real estate funds invest in.
Great, thank you very much. And we've got a question for Christoph. Re the GIMP 6 levers and exits to value-added, can you say how important each has been over, say, 5 years? And do you see it changing going forward?
Yeah, sure. Of course, if you look at the six levers, maybe first to start with the last part of the question. I think for the future, buy and build really will become more and more a lever for value creation. We see this, of course, is also linked with the element that was mentioned by Paul. Markets are rather expensive today. So if you see typically also that there is a correlation between the size of the company and the price that you pay for a company, the larger a company is, the higher the price tends to be. So if you can buy a company which can become a platform for further extension through M&A of smaller companies, that sometimes is also more interesting from a price perspective. Over the last couple of years, if you look at the historical value creation, I think there two elements were really key in the value creation that we have seen in our portfolio. That was one, internationalization. So we had some companies that were local champions and that we very successfully could further build out from a regional perspective. And the other one was, the one I mentioned, was the product market combination. So where in a rather earlier stage of the development, the product is there, some key customers are there, but we can further build out the company to make it more mature, to make it more, let's say, to generate more steady and recurrent revenues and cash flows. So these have been, let's say, the two key ones in the success of the growth we saw in our more historical portfolio.
Thank you. And this is a question for all of you. So perhaps we start with Paul. Why is there a discount to NAV, and are listed PE funds better in performance than normal PE closed funds?
So the discount to NAV question is a great one. And you know, I think if you look across the market, as I mentioned, the vast majority have some level of discount. And within that, obviously, there's a range as well. And I think there's lots of things I could speculate as to being the reason in terms of people's understanding of portfolios and relative weighting of the factors that go into valuation. But the one thing I'll say is, if you look at private equity markets, then within the actual private part of those markets, secondary investments in private equity funds typically occur at relatively small discounts between limited partners, sometimes even at NAV and occasionally even above that. And so if you look at the institutional investors participating in secondaries, there typically is a very small discount. But in the public listed markets that we're talking about today, those discounts, range up to 20-30%, sometimes even a little bit more. And I think it's really the just people looking at the portfolios and whether the right information is there and the understanding of the portfolios. And of course, ultimately, the buy, the difference between the buyers and the sellers in terms of numbers and whether there is enough demand for the assets. So really, I think my answer is that looking at the listed private equity funds in most cases have very high quality assets within them. And institutional investors typically transact at higher prices for private equity assets. The listed markets tend to be different though. And I'll see if Linda or Christoph have any other points to add to that.
Christoph, would you like to go next?
Yeah, sure. Maybe just short on HIMF. In fact, we don't trade at a discount. We trade at a slight premium. So in that respect, it's a bit difficult for me to elaborate on the discounts. But maybe my reading on the reason why we could be trading at a slight premium today is of course, the forward-looking aspect of an investor in the HIMF share, in the sense that each time that we publish an exit, people have seen that there was a rather strong uptick on the exit proceeds versus the last valuation, which as such is of course not a merit, because you can value a company in line with what you see in terms of performance. But nevertheless, over the last exits we have done, there was an average uplift of about 40% above the last published valuation. So there, I think an investor in the HIMF share sees the upward potential of the portfolio versus the current valuation. This also goes together with the fact that we have a very young portfolio today. The average duration of our investments today is 3.8 years. So there is still an upward potential in terms of further value, given the young status of our portfolio companies. And then the third element, of course, and that is also a very important one, we are very much aware of that, is the dividend yield. If today people can buy a HIMF stock with a 4.6% dividend yield, that also makes it an attractive asset in the current interest rate environment, and also with the upside of having the unlisted portfolio and the further value. So it's a combination of having a yield, which is attractive for yield investors, and the upside potential in value. And that is our reading on the reason why we are trading today at a slight premium. But of course, it's always the shareholder and the investor who is right on that one. That's maybe a short explanation from my side.
Thank you. And are listed PE funds better in performance than normal PE closed funds?
Oh, to be very honest, I don't have any statistics on that one. I think there are, you always have a range. Also in non-listed PE funds, you have typically the quartiles of performance. So there is a very wide range of very strong performing funds and maybe underperforming funds. But I don't know whether listed PE funds overall or on average would be better performing than the non-listed. I don't dare to say that because I lack the data on that one.
Thank you, Christoph. And Linda, what's your view on the discount to NAV and whether listed PE funds are better in performance than normal PE closed funds?
So our business model or earnings model is quite different from a lot of the other private or listed private capital funds. So as a private capital fund manager, we just have a small balance sheet of 130 million that we invest directly into our funds. And then if you compare that to our market cap of 450 million, we trade at a huge premium. But that just reflects that the majority of the earnings potential comes from the actual management fees and carried interest potential from managing those funds. So I think there's quite a lot of good points brought up by both Christoph and Paul here regarding what the reason for the discount is. I mean, might be sort of the that there is also a slight portfolio discount applied for these types of assets in general, but then at the same time I think the one way to counter it is to offer a predictable dividend, and that's also something that we at CapMan want to do. So that's an important part of our sort of the reasons why invest in CapMan or why we want to offer investors so to be able to offer a predictable and growing dividend, which we've done now for 7 years in a row. Then when it comes to whether the performance for listed private equities is better compared to non-listed, as Christoph said, I also lack the data to be able to confidently state whether that's the case. I think there might be something said about the added disclosure that is required for listed funds and that additional information that's available publicly, and that transparency might then add to also. In a sense, somehow then translate to better performance. But I mean, for us as a multi-product house, we see a range of performance also for our own funds. So we have top quartile performers, and then we occasionally also have teams that don't perform that well, and then as a consequence, there are no subsequent fundraisers for those teams. So I think there's plenty of different types of performance for all models.
Well, one thing I maybe just add is obviously with limited partner funds in private equity, they're typically 10-year lives where you're locked up for 10 years as an institutional investor. Whereas all of us have listed funds which are evergreen in nature, so we reinvest the proceeds. So the model and the comparison to an LP fund is much harder in that sense, because they're a given private equity fund will raise a series of 10-year funds, whereas all of us have evergreen vehicles where we reinvest proceeds. Obviously, in all of our cases, also pay some of those proceeds out as dividends, but there's a difference there. And you know, the other point I would just add for MVP although there is a discount, obviously the share price return has been very good over different periods, because the discount unfortunately has been there for a long time. So you know, I would say looking at the share price returns is also important when thinking about discounts.
Thank you. And listed private capital generally has a long-term time horizon. So for each of you, what makes you excited for the future? Perhaps start with Christoph.
For the near future, what we see today, when we look at the figures that we get in from our portfolio companies, we really see that the economic relaunch is happening. I mean, performance in 2021 has been very, very good up to now. So I think that the prospects in terms of further growth and also profitability improvement is really promising for our portfolio right now. Of course, there are some issues with regards to supply chain and availability and prices of raw materials. But nevertheless, we see very strong development within a portfolio company. So that's already a positive signal. For the further future, I think today we will see. I talk now for Europe because let's say Western Europe is our key investment region. What we think it will be a long-term trend that will be positive for the development of our activities is that there will be supported by digitalization, but also by sustainability, which are, let's say, key two trends, not only in our sector, but in the whole economy, that there will be an investment boom with regards to industry getting back to the local producer. So digitalization helps, of course, in managing the differential in labor cost, because labor becomes increasingly less a cost feature with regards to investment decisions. And sustainability will be an important one in terms of logistics and etc. So therefore, we are really positive and optimistic about what we call the industrial renaissance that can take place over the next 5 to 10 years in Europe. And that, of course, will offer very interesting investment opportunities for us and for all private equity investors in Europe, in fact.
Thank you. And Linda, what makes you excited for the future?
Well, I think especially the way that the private equity model can be applied to a lot of different sectors. So we've seen that sort of come into play in real estate, and I think infrastructure is sort of the next place where this will happen. So I think that's going to be a very, very interesting space going forward when there's quite a lot of investments that need to be made on a government level and where private capital can be of help. So I think that's a very interesting space to be in at the moment. And then also as Christoph said, I think the areas into impact investing and sustainable investments as such will become really mainstream, and especially when the there are improved ways of measuring the actual impact of these investments, and it's not going to be a question of whether one has to sort of choose between good returns and making impactful investments, but to actually be able to see that these two things go hand in hand. So I think that's going to be another very interesting area.
Thank you. And Paul, at MB Private Equity, what do you see as exciting about the future, particularly with a longer term time horizon?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we've got a portfolio that's 116% invested. So, you know, I think in a favorable position of having companies that are performing well, we've held for, on average, almost 3.5 years, puts us in a good position and having those companies doing well and the potential for future exits. But really, with regard to broader private equity, obviously, as we get realizations, we ultimately need to reinvest, and through the co-investments we look at, we see, as I mentioned, 300 to 400 investments a year alongside high quality private equity funds. And so we're getting a really good view into what's going on in the market. And although prices have increased in recent years, just as they have in most asset classes, I think we're really continuing to see differentiated investment plans, value add, coming from private equity sponsors that can continue to create good returns in the private equity asset class in general. And so I'd say, you know, a lot's written about the amount of money and the level of competition in private equity, and I think that's very true. But I'd say what excites me is that as more money is coming in, as funds are having to pay more on entry, we're seeing a constantly increasing level of involvement and action plans, and it's through a number of the things Christoph mentioned, like M&A, really making companies better, diversifying companies, growing companies, and I think we're seeing really good plans for that in many of the investments we're looking at. So we think there's still a really exciting opportunity for the medium and long term in private equity.
Many thanks, Paul and Linda and Christoph, for great presentations. PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.